Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. This week we'll be talking about the new foreign managers making their mark in England and throughout Europe. We'll be joined by the wonderful James Horncastle to discuss Maurizio Sarri's introduction at Chelsea. And we'll also be talking about the advances made by Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds, Thomas Tuchel at PSG, and Unai Emery's uncertain start but promising start at Arsenal. I'm joined again by Michael De Silva and Ryan Hun. Hello, both of you.
Hello.
And let's jump straight in. I mentioned there that I felt that Emery had had an uncertain start, but still a promising start at Arsenal. And I suppose what I meant by that is, even though they've lost both games, both tough matches to Chelsea and to Manchester City, there have been promising indications of a path forward. How do you feel about that, Michael?
I mean, I think if you'd said to, most Arsenal fans would have accepted that they'd have no points, or maybe 1 point from those opening two games. So it's not exactly a crisis or a particular surprise. But I think there's enough good points from Arsenal, certainly in that second game against Chelsea, where I think Chelsea deserved it just about. But things are starting to click a little bit for Arsenal. And I think it's West Ham next for them, right?
Yeah. At home.
Yeah. So you'd like to think that they'll get off the mark there. I wouldn't, but I think you would.
What do you think is working for them? What have you seen that's encouraged you about Arsenal?
They got behind Chelsea quite a lot certainly in that first half. Second half, they kind of tailed off. They weren't so good. But I thought Bellerin was a liability at the back. But going forward, he was a real asset for them. And I think there are signs that Emery is going to try to utilise those wide players a bit more.
I saw some chance creation there. I mean, it's funny because I saw some glaring misses from close positions. But you could argue, conversely, that the quality of chance Arsenal creating is impressive.
Yeah, I think this was the first, having watched all the preseason games as well, it's the first clear example of the work that Emery's doing on the training ground, I think.
Right. Mm.
You saw it with Mkhitaryan's goal. No, Iwobi's goal, actually. Mm. It was 19 passes out of the back. And a very similar, actually, to what we were saying last week about Man City's
the quality of
chances,
chance creation.
Getting to the byline and cutting back.
Yeah.
And that created a few chances for Arsenal. Having been there for the taking at 2-0, actually, Arsenal could have had five in that first half.
What do you think about Lacazette not starting? Because for me, I think it's a ready-made partnership with Aubameyang.
Yeah, I think he started Iwobi because Iwobi, I'm not sure if you remember last season when Arsenal played Chelsea at the Bridge, but Iwobi played in a similar role and he's really good defensively. He offers quite a lot defensively, which I think Emery probably would have looked at that game. I think it was 0-0 that game last season. And he works hard. I think in Chelsea away, I think a point would have been enough. And I think it was more Emery looking for a little bit of stability. You know, he dropped Aaron Ramsey to the bench. And the reason maybe Aubameyang started up front on his own kind of alludes to maybe Emery thinking we might have had to hit him on the break. I've been outed. Sorry, Arsenal having to hit Chelsea on
there.
The break.
The truth is out there.
I think also with Aubameyang and Lacazette on the pitch away to Chelsea, I think it leaves you maybe a little bit too exposed.
Although Lacazette, I don't think will have done himself any favours with his role in the Chelsea winner, right?
Yeah, I think him and Torreira were both at fault, actually. Torreira didn't track Alonso. I think all three goals were pretty soft, actually, and defensively.
Just to flip it, what did you guys think of Chelsea? I thought Jorginho he looks the part. He looks really good. I like how he influences the game from a kind of a deep, more subtle player.
That's actually what Fabregas, I suppose, was supposed to be or was at certain... He's what Fabregas was in the first season that Mourinho came back and won the league.
Yeah.
The sort of deep lying midfield. They're not necessarily defensively that strong, which is a problem, I think, but ability to sort of dictate the play from deep.
And Jorginho doesn't look like, I mean, he's not a big guy. He's not a really huge physical presence.
No.
He does it all with his feet.
I like Jorginho a lot. Yeah. I think he had a good game. I think Chelsea were impressive, actually. I think the way that they attacked in the first half was, I mean, it put Arsenal under a lot of pressure.
Barkley looked good. Let's just say Ross Barkley.
I wanted to mention Barkley, and he kind of went under the radar a little bit. But I think he could...
He's a lovely player.
Sarri likes him.
Yeah.
He likes him.
I'm glad to see him getting seemingly looking like he's in Sarri's plans as well.
Yeah, he'll have Kovacic kind of on his back.
Who was impressive as well when he came on.
So, yeah, so he'll need to, it's good for Barkley to have that pressure in his place, for his place, I should say. But yeah, it's good to see him back, because things kind of went off the rails a little bit for him at Everton. So he's a player with huge potential, similar age to Raheem Sterling, you know, came through at the same kind of time. But obviously Sterling has gone on to bigger and better things while Barkley's career has stalled a little bit.
One thing I want to do and sort of jump in with a segue is you look at this Arsenal team and it's very clear already the Emery imprint, you know, the man that won these three Europa Leagues at Sevilla. You see the style. He likes his high pressing, defensively minded forwards. Mm. And a segue to another manager who's made a big impression very quickly, Bielsa at Leeds, Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds. Oh. You watch that team and you're like, already you see the hallmarks.
Three out of three, right?
Three out of three in the championship this season, I think. So they've played 3-1-3, scored 9, conceded 2, blew away Stoke in the first game, and they've won again this weekend, and they, I think, beat Frank Lampard's Derby County 4-1. Mm. Bielsa is fascinating, isn't he? Because he's the kind of... He's the inspiration for so many other managers.
Yeah.
I think a real key sign about Bielsa is how many people just absolutely adore him.
Rave about him.
And you can see that impact he's already had at Leeds. For years and years and years and years, they've been through a really torrid time.
Mm.
And there's been such uncertainty at the club. You know,
the ownership
very
side,
ropey ownership, poor managerial choices, poor player recruitment, to now. It's a completely...
There's an identity now to Leeds.
Exactly. And it's really good to see them with a plan and with someone who the whole club seems to be behind. And he's, you know, instantly energised that club.
I don't think the championship...
Maybe energise them too much. I mean, Bielsa, the famous... Yeah, the dark side of Bielsa's tactics. He'll be absolutely knackered after Christmas, is the old...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, we were talking about this before we recorded, you know, that how difficult that league is, and 46 games in a season.
Saturday, Tuesday.
They want to get out of the League Cup and the FA Cup as quick as possible.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I don't think the championship has ever seen a formation of 3-3-3-1 before.
I mean, it's amazing.
It's vintage football manager. Like, I'm going to take over Leeds and I'm going to chuck in a 3-3, you know.
I'm kind of happy for Leeds, you know. I feel like they've done their time, you know. How long have they been out of the Premier League? Like 15 years,
14
is it?
14 years. 14, 15 years.
It's too long for a club that size. And they've got, I mean, the championship have got three or four sleeping giants, Nottingham Forest being another one. I'd like to see them come back.
It's got some real institutions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You've got Villa,
Aston Villa.
Wow, Hey, one thing I want to say about Bielsa, though, we were talking, I think, before about this and about the fact that he's so heralded despite not having necessarily that much silverware.
Mm.
And I just think that's because it's the cliche, but he is ahead of his time. He's like that sort of film director, like Jodorowsky or whatever. Like, he's that person who makes the movie that inspires the big movie. Like a kind of Lou Reed. You know how Lou Reed actually didn't sell that much as the ones that like went and took his style? Or like Rakim. You know, Rakim didn't sell as many as like Tupac, but if you talk to all the rappers, they're like, he's like a rapper's rapper, manager's manager.
Yeah, right? Well, he really is. He does leave a mark, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? Chile hadn't qualified for 2 World Cups and then he took them back to the World Cup.
Yeah. Mm.
First time they got a point away at Uruguay. Was it forever?
I just wish Bielsa had come to Leeds like a little bit earlier.
Of course.
I think he's 62, certainly in his early 60s. I feel like the influence of his methods have perhaps been kind of taken and moved on a little bit from, you know, by the likes of Guardiola, of course, Pochettino. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Bielsa's still got a bit more to
offer. I think he's still got it. I think what it is with Bielsa, if you look at the team, if you look at the managers who've taken from him, they have had, what they do is they don't press the entire nine. They basically have, like, say, like 40 minutes where they do the Bielsa style.
Yeah.
They've kind of diluted it to an extent. So even you look at Liverpool to an extent, Liverpool, now they've bought Naby Keita, can play that style for 70 minutes as opposed to 40 because he gives them the intensity.
Absolutely.
And I think other managers have recognised, look, if and actually I think Guardiola said this, he said if Athletic Bilbao played at that every week, they'd win the league every week.
Yeah.
But you can't have the intensity.
Well, that's it. And you have to. Sorry.
Continue. No, that's fine. No, one thing I want to say, the last thing I'll say is the one thing with Bielsa is he can create the perfect DVD. If you want someone to create the perfect performance, like this is the perfect football performance, Bielsa's that guy. He creates individual masterpieces. Yeah. And I think that's his value as a great coach.
Totally. You have to wonder whether Leeds, with the greatest respect, have the players with the fitness levels and the quality to maintain it beyond the end of the year.
Yeah.
I'd be really interested to see Leeds' performances from, say, January to May, because I wouldn't be surprised to see them top at Christmas. But it's one of the most exciting projects we've seen in English football for a long, long time.
Yeah, they've made some really good signings as well. I mean, I knew they signed Bamford, which I think is actually, I think Bamford under Bielsa.
Terrific player.
It's just, that's kind of,
terrific.
That's
terrific.
Fun. That just sounds fun to me. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, Lewis Baker on loan from Chelsea. Jack Harrison from City. So they've got Jamal Blackman as well, the goalkeeper from Chelsea. Ooh. So who is really highly rated. Mm. Actually, I spoke to a friend of mine who's a Leeds fan here in Berlin, and he was really excited about Jamal Blackman, but also worried a little bit because there's a couple of other keepers coming through at Leeds. Mm. But they just seem really exciting again.
I think there's a lot of goodwill for the Bielsa project.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he's going to get I think he's going to get a lot more time than maybe other managers have recently at Leeds, you know.
Yeah, you'd like to think so.
Well, I'm in the game of doing segues. The word project is used probably most often in association with Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, I think project is the kind of, there are two things that make a project in football. There's money plus a foreign manager. Like if the two elements of money and a foreign manager, I've never seen an English manager in charge of a team and call it a project. So at PSG, you've got the ultimate project. You've got Thomas Tuchel. And you've got a lot of money and an interesting dressing room dynamic, shall we say. Mm. How do you feel about Tuchel at PSG so far and going forward?
I think I'm really excited about it. I think Tuchel is a great coach. I think he has his own philosophy, kind of influence from elsewhere, but it's a very distinctive way of playing football. I think I don't want to get on the wrong side of Dortmund fans, but I think he was perhaps they weren't ready for him, and he didn't have the tools at his disposal there that he's going to have at PSG. This is a guy who turned Aubameyang into the player that he is. He took him from one of the top players in the Bundesliga to a genuine world-class striker. He also brought on the likes of Ousmane Dembélé.
And Mkhitaryan, actually.
Mkhitaryan, Pulisic.
Who struggled under Klopp, and Pulisic is extraordinary, right.
Yeah, and all of these guys are where they are now, and I reckon a lot of them wish they were still being coached by Tuchel.
Yeah, he strikes me as someone who is people really want to play for, of a certain dynamic. So you see, same with Guardiola. Some players of certain kind with certain egos or maybe certain, you know.
Maybe a certain age, because if you look at it's not necessarily, I think you made a great point there. Partly the key that, you know, young players tend to be more malleable. Mm-hmm. But also I think, you know, he's worked very well with more sort of fragile personalities. Fragile is not fair. More sensitive personalities. And I think the challenge he had at Dortmund really was, you know, there was a twofold. The budget was a challenge. He didn't have the players he wanted necessarily, but also fell out with some of the older guard who had a way of doing things. Yeah. They had maybe a manager that gave more leeway, that was perhaps less controlling.
Yeah.
You know, like Nuri Sahin, the old guard Dortmund who were like, oh, we do things differently around here. And it's really interesting that they're the ones that came out to criticise him most when, you know, all stuff, the fall happened.
Yeah, I mean, on the pitch, he's a really exciting coach, and he's a disciple of Pep in many ways.
Right.
Speaks very highly of Pep, doesn't he? He really loves him.
He does. I think he likes that high press, and, you know, there's an element of gegenpressing to his to his philosophy as well. But I think one area where if it's going to go wrong for him at PSG, it could be with his relationship with the board. You know, that's where it went wrong at Dortmund. He fell out with them. I don't think he felt like he was being backed as much as, you know, I think there was one time when he said that we can't sell our best players and get better as a team. Mm. It's a dichotomy.
That's a challenge you won't have at PSG so much.
Exactly.
Once Neymar's gone, I mean, Neymar could well go to Madrid.
Yeah.
But they have Mbappe.
Yeah.
They have Timothy Weah coming through the ranks, who's looked really good. They've just got a terrific array of young players. You know, recruitment won't be a challenge. I think if they treat it as a project, if they say, listen, let's be Champions League contenders within 4 years, which is entirely possible, then they could do something really exciting.
Absolutely. And this is where his strength lies and how he manages the likes of Neymar and Mbappe. I think he will. I really do think he will. I mean, he's kind of a micromanager. He likes to manage the small details, but as long as they buy into it and, you know, as other players have done, the ones I mentioned a few minutes ago, I think we could be onto something special with PSG. Might have finally found their man.
Yeah, I mean, he's a manager that they've not had in terms of profile before.
Right.
And I think he's the first guy in that kind of Guardiola Klopp-esque mold that those kind of clubs really want now.
Right.
And I think actually I was a little bit worried when he went there with the Neymar situation in terms of like how they would gel. And obviously, he wasn't around in pre-season. So, I mean, there are only two games into Ligue 1. So, you know, we can't really tell yet. But I think actually he's someone who, like Klopp, he has that ability to drill those players really hard, but also stick that, you know, quote-unquote arm around the shoulder. It's like, no, actually, I really care about you.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that I think if you're going to manage Neymar, I think is really important.
Yeah,
almost trick him into working hard.
But another aspect is tactically as well. He's flexible.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Even the game we saw at the weekend, PSG beat
Gangor.
I'm glad you said that. they were 1-0 down at half time. They were playing a 4-3-3, and Mbappe wasn't on the pitch. He switched it up and he brought Mbappe on, changed it to a 4-2-3-1, and not every coach has basically the guts to do that, or not maybe the guts, but they believe so much in their own philosophy.
The ideology is sadly the 4-3-3.
Yeah, right, they don't want to accept that they need to change it. But Tuchel is humble enough to know that. So he switched it around, and I mean, PSG, you'd expect them to beat
Gangor. Gangor. Yes.
But I think it was because of Tuchel's change that was facilitated.
Talking of changes, and just jumping into another foreign manager who is...
Before you jump out, sorry to interrupt, can I just pull up one thing from that game, which was amazing? Did you see the end? Was it Marcus Thuram swapping shirts with Buffon, who was born in Parma when Lillian and Buffon played together?
Cool.
That's wild.
And I just thought that was really...
He's Gandalf, isn't he? Really? Like, you look at like goalkeeping Gandalf.
It was like, so great. It's like, I'm just swapping shirts with my mate, my dad's mate.
It's amazing.
He's still playing.
Back from our break, and let's take a quick look at some of those games in the weekend. What stood out to you, Michael and Ryan?
Well, maybe we get onto the Premier League in a minute. I watched Torino versus Roma, and that was a cool game. It was really cool. It looked like it was going to be 0-0 for, basically until the last minute, and a little bit of magic from Dzeko settled it, and he is such a class player. He's so, so good.
Dzeko's had a funny career because he's been slightly maligned, I think. If you look at the results he's produced, Wolfsburg, City, Roma, he's been really impressive, actually.
Yeah,
consistently.
Yeah. Always had a great scoring record wherever he's gone. And yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen Dzeko's goal against Torino, please check it out. I mean, created by Justin Kluivert, who looks really impressive, really, really impressive. He kind of beat two or three defenders. I think he beat the same defender twice, actually.
Yeah.
And then crossed it. Perfect cross for the far post. And Dzeko, just a controlled volley into the far corner. And it was a goal worthy of settling any game. So, yeah, that was a cool game.
Kluivert made a real impact when he came on as well. He just like...
Yeah.
What a great career move. Can I just say this? Look, because funny how he's echoed his dad and going from Ajax to Serie A.
Yeah, true.
But also, you know, Roma is a better club, I think, than Milan was for his father, because there's chances to play. The expectation, I think, is that bit lower. But you're playing alongside terrific older players who can kind of bring you on.
It's reckon his father has advised him really well there. There's no point going. I mean, I'm sure teams like, you know, Barcelona, City were looking at him. But at his age, you just need to be getting game time.
Right, right.
And he's doing it at the best possible club he can do it at, if that makes sense.
Yes, of course.
So, yeah, I think it's a perfect move for him. And as long as he's playing regularly, I think he could be a star in the making. I mean, he's got this low center of gravity. He can just jink past defenders, like just so effortlessly. Right, right. Yeah, he's really exciting.
And prospect. Vision sounds like he's got a good end product.
Yeah.
Can pick a pass up.
I think he could have it all.
Yeah, so, Ryan, what have you been spying on? Which games have you been watching? You've had a binge by the sounds of it.
I watched so much football this weekend. Also in Serie A, Lazio-Napoli was a really, really good game. Lazio took the lead. So the ball comes forward. There's three Napoli defenders. We're talking to James a bit later about Sarri, and obviously left Napoli. He would have cried watching this defending. Immobile's got three defenders against him. I think it's Koulibaly, Albiol, and I can't remember who the other guy is. And he literally backheels it past three of them and they all go the same way. It's the most schoolboy. Such terrible defending.
But it wasn't a great piece of skill, though.
It was lovely, but the way that three top level defenders shouldn't be sold the way that I mean, if you watch the goal, it was a bit like that was kind of amazing, but also what are they doing? It reminded me of, it was very Arsenal-esque, their defending. and then slotted it away really nice. And then, Napoli came back.
But I'm almost sympathetic when three defenders buy a dummy, because Zidane did that. Whatever, he had a comeback game and he does this incredible dribble top of the box. And at first you're like, okay, the players look stupid. But then after a point you're like, well, I mean, it's kind of magical, right?
The thing is the spacing between them. I think all three defenders were separated by about a yard and a half.
Oh no.
You know, so, and they all went to him. And
I need to watch that. It sounds comical.
It was a good game. And then there was a VAR disallowed goal where I think Koulibaly smashed some guy in the back of the head and he was literally laying on the floor in the middle of the 6-yard box and Koulibaly jumped over him again and Milik, I think it's the Polish guy.
Yes, Milik, yeah.
He scored, but it got disallowed, and then he actually scored the equaliser, and then Insigne scored the winner. It's lovely. Really
good to see Milik back, because he had a terrible injury as well, didn't he, at one point?
Yeah, last season when he moved, right?
Yeah. Quick shout before we get into Premier League for Leo Messi against Alaves, only because Barcelona beat Alaves 3-0, and I know Messi's great. I know that we love Messi on this podcast, but I just think his passing is something which is just extraordinary. And he was, the first half against Alaves, he was mind-blowing. The weight, the depth, the range of his passing. And I think, you know, I'm a big believer that he's been around so long and he's been so good that there's a risk of actually underappreciating what he does. Mm. So I just sort of...
Well, he scored their 6,000th La Liga goal, and he also scored their fifth thousand,
greatest 5,000 of all time
by a significant distance.
Yeah, yes. He was amazing. That game
back to the bank.
Yeah, his free kick was really good. He
under the wall,
and just nice. I mean,
cheeky. So Musa, I don't want to bring it up, but Manchester United.
Oh no, I'm happy to discuss it.
What happened?
Just a complete emotional, sort of psychological implosion, really. Because United started very well, but they don't have players. They don't have enough players that can assert match control. Fred is a new player in the midfield and unfortunately looks frantic, is not psychologically settled, I think, at the moment. Mm. So he's doing a lot of ball chasing, lost positional sense. Andres Pereira is similar. The scary thing about United is, at the moment, they look frightened. Mm. Paul Pogba made more mistakes, and he didn't look frightened, but he looked frantic, and he made more mistakes in 90 minutes than he made in the entire, you know, 6 weeks of France's World Cup campaign.
Do you think the tide is turning in the United dressing room against Mourinho?
I don't see how it can't be. You know, people are coming out in the press and hammering Anthony Martial for being a poor player. Martial must be devastated, because this is a player who was ahead of Dembele in the pecking order. Mm. You know, came to United, scored against Liverpool in his first match, was heralded as a future United legend, and had problems in his personal life, you know, a bad breakup. But the point is really, you know, Mourinho has destroyed so much of his confidence. This is an elite attacking talent.
It's also a guy, by the way, who quite legitimately wanted to attend the birth of his baby and couldn't do it without being criticised.
Wanted to go on loan to Sevilla because he feared that he wouldn't get to go to the World Cup. This is someone that wants to play football. This isn't your sort of typical, you know, he's being stereotyped as a kind of a shirker who's not professional. Martial wanted to go to Sevilla on loan because he was so desperate to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And if you can't get the best out of a player like Martial, quite frankly, then it's on you because we all look what Sarri's done already with Morata. Mm. Morata has already looked more confident. Yeah. Look what Raheem Sterling's done under Guardiola. Look what Ross Barkley's already doing under Sarri. This is the fault is with the manager.
Yeah, and it's a flaw that has followed Mourinho throughout his career. I mean, he's never been at any club longer than 3 years, I believe. Right. Real Madrid, I think, was his longest, 2010 to 2013. He's not one for the long term, and that's always because he falls out with people. He can't keep the peace.
I'm sorry to jump in, but this is important. I just want to say, Brighton fans, any Brighton fans listening, outstanding performance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely amazing what you did. Yeah. The pressing was terrific. The way that you absorbed the early pressure as a team was fantastic. And Chris Hughton, just a manager for whom I have immense respect, not only as a manager, but someone who I met personally once at a football writer's dinner.
Mm.
And just he'd just been sacked, actually. And they brought in Pardew for him. And the way that he handled that, I think it was the Newcastle job.
Yeah.
He was doing a really good job at Newcastle. And I saw Pardew walk past Chris Hughton at this event. And he could not have been more gentle, more kind, even though the circumstances of that were absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
So this is a man.
Chris Hughton is really respected.
He really is one of the nice guys.
Dignified
of football.
Guy.
Yeah. And I just have to say that, I mean, Brighton were terrific. So I don't want to sort of sound as if I'm maligning that club.
Of course not. But this, Manchester United obviously have different expectations to Brighton. And,
I think
that's the key thing to say is that I don't think necessarily the result to losing at Brighton is so catastrophic. I think it was more the performance
and
after that, as soon as Brighton scored, United looked genuinely awful for a period of time.
Absolutely right.
And with every United defeat under Mourinho, the spectre of Zinedine Zidane just gets a little bit closer.
Hey, exactly. Exactly. I can actually say, but since we're talking about while on the subject of Manchester teams playing long ball football, Manchester City.
What an assist.
Manchester City against Huddersfield.
He was just punting it upfield, wasn't he?
Look, I mean, the thing
that
is...
That was absolutely incredible.
He meant that. I mean, like the passing range of Edison. I mean, he's extraordinary. And,
yeah.
But
did you see the angle from behind the Huddersfield goal where... Because it's a goal kick, so obviously he can't be offside. Hmm. And Aguero is standing to City's left-hand side. And he just makes a dart across behind the defender and then Edison plays it into space
for him
to run onto. And the defender has no idea where he is.
Yeah, Schindler.
He really puts it
into a 10-yard box right around. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. But I want to say about City very quickly, there's a great piece of analysis by Leon Osman saying, if you look at how City now learn to break teams down, because last year they were having teams sit deep against them, so pace wasn't so effective. They took out Sterling, they took out Walker, they took out Sané. And they brought in the ball players, and there's 77% possession, I think, and 32 shots on
goal.
That's
staggering.
And Mendy was extraordinary. The low ball driven across goal. I think Mendy had 3 assists.
I don't think I've ever seen a percentage that high.
I was saying the last time I saw was 86 when Barca lost 1-0 to Inter in the Champions League.
Oh yeah, they lost.
Yes,
86.
Yeah,
86%. 86%.
But this is Mourinho, peak Mourinho. But
yeah.
But to your point about City's dynamic possession, not just control of the ball, but exposing actually Huddersfield, a good side.
Yeah.
A good side.
I think losing Kevin De Bruyne for 3 months is going to be a blow. And I think it gave every other club a little bit of hope. Okay, well, maybe they're not going to be so infallible, but then they just go out and
win 6-1. That hope is now gone.
And also just a very quick shout out to Kieran Trippier as well, free kick specialist.
Oh, wow.
Christian Eriksen, he can't get one now.
It's like when Beckham came in for Giggs. Giggs would take all the free kicks for United after Dennis Irwin.
Yeah,
and then Beckham came in and Giggs didn't take one for 10 years.
I'm so happy for Trippier because when he came in, a lot of Spurs fans, not disrespectful, but they were just like, is he the player that we need? Pochettino has turned him into arguably the best right back in the league, certainly one of them. And he just seems to get better and better. And that's one of the things that Pochettino is so good at, just extracting the best out of players. And another reason why I think Lucas Moura is going to have a good season.
We're not in a generation actually of great right backs, so that's the thing about Trippier. Watch out for the big bid from abroad. I have to say, because a player like that, with those qualities, this is a guy that came and replaced Kyle Walker, basically, and is better.
And he was with the greatest respect, pretty unknown at Burnley.
Absolutely.
Mm. I mean, I thought he was French.
He's an ex-Man City.
Can I quickly say this?
Because he didn't quite make the grade, did he?
You look at the World Cup, and Kyle Walker played as a right centre-back. He sacrificed. Yeah. This is a guy that is playing. He's played as a right wing-back for City, and they can't get the game there. It's extraordinary how
they offer very different things, don't they? And I think that, I mean, the interesting thing about Trippier is that he's 27. Mm. So if he is going to move,
he's the kind
of age where I think he would be able to slot seamlessly into, you know, it'd be really interesting to see if there is a move come in for him.
I don't think so. I think he'll stay.
You hope so. You hope not, you mean.
Damn. Any other games on your radar?
Isn't it Tottenham versus Man United this weekend?
It is.
Oh, we're trying not to think about that. Oh, Lord.
Right, I think it's at Old Trafford there, right?
That makes no difference these days. It makes no difference, to be honest. Yeah. Might as well be on the moon.
Yeah, I tweeted you yesterday, didn't I, saying when you said something about Man United fixtures and how they make you feel uneasy.
Horrifying.
I think it's
horrifying.
Sorry, you got Arsenal at home November.
That doesn't give me any comfort at all.
Well, at least you know that if things are going really bad by November, that's a struggling team needs more than Arsenal at
home. We're in a different timeline now. With this United team, you suddenly don't know where the points are coming from. Mm. They could just free fall for a couple of games, really, because psychologically they're absolutely shot. Mm. I mean, you know, you've got... Let's not make a United podcast. There's just so many ill-fitting parts in that team at the moment. Mm. They're ill-fitting, I think, because of the coaching primarily, but they look out of sorts.
Yeah, it's two games in, but the early signs are not good.
Can I just give some quick praise to Everton? Because, you know, they bought Richarlison for a lot of money. A lot of people laughed at that. This man scored 3 goals in 2 games. Theo Walcott looks happy. They're a side, I think, that are kind of what you call the improved middle class of the Premier League, a team that might come between, let's say, sort of 7th and 12th, but will offer a strong challenge every game. Watford as well, in a similar vein. A friend of mine goes, oh, you know, Watford, you know, well, they're not all that. I was like, well, they've got Roberto Pereira up front, who played for River Plate and Juventus, and they beat Burnley 3-1 away from home. And no matter how well or badly Burnley are playing, to score 3 goals away at Burnley is an impressive...
I mean, their home record in the last couple of seasons, Burnley has been very, very good.
Yeah.
And... that was a...
Burnley might have a tough time following up last season.
I mean, Watford have got a real sort of sting in the tail, if I may put that out there.
The Hornets.
It's a reference.
Right.
Oh, sorry. You weren't meant to mention, so I just made a little reference there.
Some good games tonight, actually. For people listening to this, we're recording on a Monday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've got Palace at home to Liverpool.
Ooh, yeah. Palace-Liverpool, always a classic.
Yeah, Valencia-Atletico in La Liga. And... Well, Bilbao, Leganés, not so strong. But Valencia-Atletico, I think, will be a good game.
That'll be a great game. But just going back to Palace-Liverpool, whenever I think of that fixture at Selhurst Park, I just think of Luis Suarez crying.
Cristanbul.
Yeah.
You remember the hashtag, Cristanbul? I remember thinking, that is literature. Whoever wrote... I mean, football is a cruel sport, but that was quick.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think that'll also be key to see how Palace are going to do this season, I think. You know, like, they're progressing really well under Roy Hodgson. I don't think people would have expected them to do as well as they did last season when he came in, especially after the start they had, and they were, you know, comfortably safe by the end of the season. So, and Zaha's just signed a new deal as well, which I think is really good for them.
Yeah, it's massive for them.
Yeah, and he's had a bit of a sad time, let's say, at Man United, but I think he's someone that, you know, I think he fits so well at Palace. I think they're keeping him for a while.
I think his time at United is in the rearview mirror already.
Yeah, definitely.
I went to interview Zaha, actually, up in Manchester when he just arrived. And I remember thinking, you know, he looked really keen to make a go of it. And I'm, of course, why wouldn't you? And I remember thinking, gosh, it looks a bit isolated out here. Mm. Like you're sort of off the main road and you're sort of tucked away and sort of away from his friends. And I just thought...
Was he living in Fallowfield?
I don't know what the part of town was, but I remember thinking, somewhere in Greater Manchester, I remember thinking, this is not a kind of ideal setup. And you can say that's in retrospect, but he didn't really have the support there. It wasn't like he was coming to a team that was already winning.
Yeah.
And even some of the
still a teenager, right?
Yeah, I think he was just into his early 20s.
Right, okay.
Even some of the kind of games he was thrown into and the times he was thrown into, I just thought, hiding to nothing, really.
Yeah, obviously Ferguson made some... great signings, memorable signings, but there were a few that didn't work out. And that was
right. Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we'll take a quick break now, and then we will have a chat with James Horncastle joining us from London to discuss Sarri's exciting start at Chelsea. So to discuss Maurizio Sarri's fascinating start at Chelsea, we have the wonderful James Horncastle joining us from London, I believe. James, great to have you on the line.
Great to be with you.
So let's leap straight into it. You've come back from Verona. You watched Juventus defeating Verona, I think it was 3-2. But mm-hmm. We're here to talk about a coach who ran Juventus very close last year with his Napoli side, Maurizio Sarri. What can you tell us about this fascinating manager?
Well, this is a guy who close to turning 60 and hasn't really been around the top of the game for very long. We're talking 4 years really. Right. And for someone who started coaching sort of the summer of Italia 90, it's been a very, very long journey to get to where he is today. A journey in which he's kind of had no favours from anyone, has had to completely get here by himself. And we're talking starting right from the bottom. Pub teams, if there are pubs in Naples, and Tuscany. Because I think the chances are, if you've been to that part of the world on holiday and you've driven through those wonderful Tuscan villages, the kind of dusty pitches that you'll find in there will have had Maurizio Sarri coaching on them at some stage.
What a story
in his career.
So, I mean, but what then has been, what's been the key behind his rise, would you say? Why has he suddenly risen to prominence? Well, slowly risen to prominence.
Oh, I mean, one of the reasons why it took him so long, let's say, is that for the first 12 years of his coaching career, he was working part-time or coaching part-time, because his main job was working in a bank, the Banca Toscana, and he was a foreign currency trader, and that used to pay the bills. It was only when kind of Italy was making moves to drop the lira and adopt the euro that foreign currency traders weren't as much in demand anymore. Mm. And he saw in that the kind of perfect opportunity to do the only job which he says he would do for free. His passion was always for football. He was a big, disciple of Arrigo Sacchi and his Milan side in the late 80s, early 90s. Used to kind of record every one of their games on VHS and watch them, and implement these kind of ideas at an amateur level. He introduced kind of professional standards among your kind of, let's say, first round of the FA Cup teams, which, are filled with accountants, postmen, milkmen, all that kind of thing. Because he didn't have a playing background, he had no contacts in the game.
Right.
So this was a problem, particularly when it came to getting his coaching badges, because to get into, Italian football's elite coaching school, Coverciano, where all of the kind of top coaches, your Ancelotti's, Conte's, Allegri's, have had to go through, he had no one who would open the door for him and get him onto one of those degrees, if you like. Mm. So that took time. Italian football is pretty ruthless, and we've seen the Premier League become more ruthless in recent years. Managers getting the sack earlier and a higher turnover of managers, but it's kind of always been like that in Italy. And so there wasn't very much patience when it came to him implementing these very sophisticated ideas that he had with quite raw material and very modest talent at his disposal. And so, you know, he's, it was quite funny. A couple of years ago, there was an article in La Repubblica, which is one of the broadsheets in Italy, interviewing all his former employers, the kind of presidents who'd been stupid enough to sack this guy. kind of comparing it with, I don't know, the people who told Marilyn Monroe that she should have just been a secretary. Elvis should have stuck to being a lorry driver and things like that. So he's really had to get himself where he is now. If you just compare him with Massimiliano Allegri, who I think many people consider to be one of the best, if not the best, Italian managers at the moment.
Right.
Allegri, he started at a very low level as well, but he came to prominence when he got Sassuolo, who, you know, have been in Serie A for years now, but had never ever been in Serie A. He got them into the second division, straight away, Cagliari saw potential in him and said, "Right, we're going to take a chance on this guy, and see what he can do." And no one took a chance on Maurizio Sarri. Mm. He had to get Empoli promoted in order to then come to the attention of the elite in Italy. He's had to do it the long and hard way.
Mm. That's fascinating. James, it's Michael here. I wanted to ask you more about that time at Empoli, because we all know, the casual football fan will know more about Sarri at Napoli, but he did an amazing job at Empoli, didn't he?
Yeah, Empoli, just to give you some context, a small club in Tuscany. They're very much in the shadow of Fiorentina. They were down in the second division when he got the job there. Have a mostly young an Italian team. Empoli are pretty renowned for finding talent very early. Historically, some of the players that have come through there: Vincenzo Montella, Antonio Di Natale, just to name but a few. But also, finding talent in terms of managers as well. So, Luciano Spalletti. I could keep listing them.
Yeah.
Empoli. He got Empoli up playing just some wonderful football, and they already had, I remember the Eddie Howe, the Bournemouth manager. He'd gone out, to Tuscany to maybe catch a few training sessions, a few games with Fiorentina, looked at what the manager at Fiorentina at the time was doing, and thought, "This isn't really anything new. I'm not really learning anything from this," and had to be persuaded to kind of stay on and see this little sort of research mission out.
Mm.
He then went to Empoli and was blown away, by what he was seeing.
Wow.
Really kind of altered his perspective on things.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about that time that Sarri had at Empoli is, their stadium, the Castellani, it's not a run-down stadium, but it's kind of quite typical of Italy, at the moment, in that there's a market there most days. I remember when they got into Europe once, when UEFA went to try and license them, they were like, "Well, what's going on here? There's like chickens running around." this is not the kind of ground that we have in UEFA competition. But they would train there most days, and it was free. So the old men, who would be going around on their bicycles and that sort of thing, would chain up their bikes and go and watch training to spend their retirement days watching Sarri put these players through their paces. And
incredible story.
And again, like, there's this stereotype of Sarri. He's relatively old when you can certainly compare to some of the coaches in the league where you guys live in Germany, where most of them are in their 30s.
Yeah.
He's not particularly elegant or glamorous in, you know, what he wears. I mean, that's been pointed out this weekend in Serie A, where Ancelotti, his replacement at Napoli, was there, you know, in a very nice blue blazer with a tie and a shirt, you know, looking very statesmanlike. And then, you know, on the Saturday, earlier that day, there's Maurizio Sarri in his oversized granddad collar shirt, sort of club uniform, and so you can get the wrong idea about Sarri, but he's very much at the cutting edge when it comes to coaching, and even then at Empoli, you're in this kind of not dilapidated stadium, but slightly a ground that's seen better days, and you know, the drones flying overhead, recording, you know, the movements of the back line, which, you know, I don't think there was any greater compliment than Alessandro Costacurta, part of that incredible AC Milan defence with Maldini, Baresi, and Tassotti, saying, you know, it's since those days that he hadn't seen a defence move in such a synchronised manner than that Empoli backline in those days.
Mm. Sarri is one of these coaches as well that doesn't really have much of a football career, playing career to speak of, and you know, we've seen. Similar things with Mourinho, of course, and as you mentioned there, here in Germany, Julian Nagelsmann and Domenico Tedesco. What do you make of that kind of... It seems like that's the trend these days. I mean, would you agree? And maybe it's more of a sign of the game becoming a bit more professional, would you say?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more democratic as well. This is a guy who greatly admires Arrigo Sacchi, and you know, we all know that famous line that Sacchi had, that, you know, you don't have to have been a horse to be a jockey. But he always remained a bit of an exception in Italy, still is. So I think with Sarri, he has had to persuade people with his own ideas, and ultimately the style of play that his teams have implemented. Mm. Yeah, that has been the greatest advertisement for appointing him than, for example, pointing to the fact that, oh, look, you're Fabio Grosso, you've won a World Cup, we'll give you a chance, right. or you're Alessandro Nesta, right. You know, why don't you come over here and we'll sack our manager who's got us into the second division playoffs, but we think you can get us into the top flight, and that sort of thing. Yeah, so. But I think one of the great things about Sarri is probably players who maybe, you know, once upon a time would look at a manager and think, a manager with no playing background and think, who do you think you are telling me what to do? His training sessions is just, so much fun, so varied, just quite, you know, exciting to it makes work going into work exciting. And I think that's something that's, you know, really comes out when you speak to his players at Empoli and at Napoli, that, you know, they didn't come in the last minute possible to start training and leave as soon as they can. You know, right. They would get in early because they just enjoyed being together.
There's an energy about the place, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, I think it's very early days at Chelsea, but you know, already players are kind of talking about that, saying how, you know, sort of mentally stimulating it is to go into training and look at things very differently from the managers and the teachers that they've had in the past.
Yeah. James, it's Ryan here. Just a quick one. I believe it's his 19th club, Sarri, Chelsea,
and the first yeah, that time, wouldn't surprise me.
And it's the first time he's managed outside of Italy.
Mm.
How do you feel is that gonna benefit him in any way? Or is that going to be a hindrance in any way? And also, even if he doesn't succeed at Chelsea, it seems to me that now he's elevated to one of those top tier managers. Do you see him going anywhere else in Europe?
I think in terms of the 19 different clubs that he's had. Yeah, in Italy, they don't see sacking as a blemish on your CV.
Right.
They see it as a kind of opportunity to learn from your mistakes, and to be better the next time around. So I think, yeah, his experience will be very, very valuable in that respect. Yeah. I also think, in regards to Chelsea, one of the things that appealed to them about him wasn't only the kind of style of football that his teams play, but also that because of his grounding in fifth, fourth, third, second division football, where your club's often struggling to get to the end of the month, it's difficult to pay wages, they're on the brink of bankruptcy, that he looks at what he's got and makes the most of it. He really believes in enriching players and teams through coaching rather than through the transfer market, which is, you know, a stark contrast with his predecessor Antonio Conte, who has resigned or been kind of told to get gone in his last two jobs because he's been very, very demanding in terms of the signings that he's wanted. I also think, Sadi's probably had his eye on working and moving abroad for some time. His English, I think, is, even though he's been sort of having a translator flank him, is better, I think, than Mancini's was, Ancelotti's was, Conte's was when he came. And having someone like Zola anyway as his assistant, is very helpful. So yeah. I also think in terms of him bedding in, I think our experience in the Premier League with these new super foreign managers, but particularly Guardiola,
right?
Where Guardiola was refused to compromise on his ideals, said he wanted to play a certain way, got hammered for it in his first season by certain sections of the British press, but has now been completely vindicated, might actually help Sadi in terms of, like, we look at him and think, well, he does need a little bit of time. Let's be patient with this because the results could be so special. And, I think he will adapt a little, but the principles will remain the same.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, James, you've not only made me excited for Chelsea's season, which is difficult as someone that doesn't support Chelsea.
And me.
You've really made me root for this guy. Yeah. Like, it's funny, like, just listening to this sounds like a kind of... It sounds like the culmination of a novel or something, or like a kind of biopic, really, like his life story. So I just want to thank you so much for an incredible contribution, James. And we know where to find you on Twitter as @JamesHorncastle, I think.
Yes, that's the one.
And can I also say this as well? Sorry to throw this in there, but one reason I love James's writing so much, well, James himself, is he wrote an incredible essay on Del Piero when Del Piero retired from football. Yeah. Which is still one of the best pieces of football writing, sports writing I've ever read.
It's in the Hall of Fame.
So please look that up. It's tremendous. James,
oh, that's very, very, very kind of you, Moose.
Just the fact, just the honest truth. Absolute pleasure having you on, and we hope to see you again soon enough.
Thanks a lot, James.
Yeah. Thanks, James.
Brilliant. Cheers, great. James. Cheers, guys.
Right, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again next week, recording slightly later. In the meantime, please tell a friend, tell an enemy. If you enjoyed the podcast, please pass it on. And we can be found at the same handle across social media, @RabonaMag. It's been a pleasure having you with us. We'll catch you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.